I apologize. I was busy this last week. I'm sure you were too. A podcast didn't happen. We said we'd come to you on the other side of Point Point, and then we didn't. So we have a lot to talk about. I want to start with the standard disclaimer that a lot of cool people do cool things on this team. We have 2 weeks worth of cool stuff. We're not going to hit all of it. I don't think anyone... No, that's not true. Very few people have taken us up on our if we miss saying your cool thing.
I've had a couple of people, and I do appreciate
it. We do genuinely... So my point there is, like, please, if we miss you or your kid's cool thing, let us know. It's not weird. Let us know. I do want to begin, before we dive into this, the only... Well, that's not true. There are maybe two really quick pieces of cycling world news to start with. The first is that Geraint Thomas retired today. He bowed out the final stage of the Tour of Britain in Cardiff, in his native Wales. Geraint Thomas is just one of the good guys. He's like the nicest. He's a winner of the 2018 Tour. He was Chris Froome's chief lieutenant for all of his Tour victories. I think maybe the classiest cyclist of all time. Absolutely. Like, I'm going to name one of my kids after him. Just really, really great. So I wanted to say, for one of my childhood heroes bowing out this week, chapeau to Geraint Thomas. This week was cool for us Americans because for probably the first time ever, I can't think of a time when this would have happened. Two American riders won the elite, won an elite world championship in the same event at the cross country marathon worlds in Switzerland. Keegan Swenson and Kate Courtney won the rainbow jersey. This is pretty cool. It's the most sought after rainbow jersey in mountain biking and cross country mountain biking is for XCO, for cross country Olympic, right? That's like what Nino's won all the times. Cross country marathon though, like looking at the start list, it was a stacked field of riders, and seeing Keegan and Kate win that was really, really, really cool.
You know, and it kind of inspires me and teaches a really cool lesson about just not giving up, because it kind of seemed like with Kate, you know, she won her world championship and she was
in 2018, she won her world championship. Yeah.
And then it kind of seemed like she was getting a little further and further back in the pack. And
I think she got into a bigger contract with Scott SRAM, which is like Nino's team. And I think by like 2020, 2021, I was saying to people that I think, you know, I think she's probably moved into the stage of her career where her value to sponsors is more in her name and saying that she endorses this product and in making content and stuff. And I was kind of like, yeah, I think her days at the pointy end of the World Cup, because it does seem like we're having fewer Ninos, and it's a lot more like people having short bursts in the sun. It's so competitive now. But she's coming back.
She really is.
Which is cool.
Which is super cool, because I bet she probably experienced a little bit of discouragement during that period of time.
Well, it's all the... You have to think of the pressure of being on a contract as big as the one you get for winning worlds and then not delivering the same results has got to be like...
Yeah.
Ugh. That's a lot.
And so for that result, that is just awesome.
Yeah.
I was super excited about
that. And it's cool that she's kind of bringing the gravel privateer form, what do we call that? Like model of sponsorship to the World Cup mountain bike scene, which I think it needs. It probably needs that to survive. I think that's a better way forward than the way we've been doing. I think the way we've been doing now, like, the riders just aren't getting paid very much. I don't think that like we're really the marketing value is really there for sponsors. Sponsors don't stay for very long. So it seems like she's really innovating and probably bringing the sport more into the 21st century, and that she's doing it too in the kind of endurance events, which are where the interest of the public seems to be increasingly. But I want to say too that like they're both just such classy, you know, as riders who represent America go, they're definitely the ones who I want to see like winning races and stuff. And
yeah, that's just such big news. That's so cool.
Very cool. And I'll say it's cool that they're doing it too with like they're riding American bike. Well, nobody's riding American bikes. Actually, Kate is. Allied is like the only bike actually made in America. But like it's cool. Cause when we got into this, like America wasn't on the radar at all.
Yeah, and both former Nike riders. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you know, throw it out. I do want to say, like, we had a lot of Danny Van Wagner was there too. Like, a lot of, there were even some kind of local people representing, which is really cool to see. A lot of cool American representation. Hats off to both of them. That's super, super, super cool. So lots of stuff. We kind of chronologically, I guess.
Yeah. So maybe we'll. So Joe and I did Point to Point. We'll talk about that in a sec. We'll go chronologically. While we were at Point to Point, I missed our Nika races. But I guess like our division two was out at Harriman. For those who haven't been, Harriman's actually a pretty nice course. It's surprising. It's actually got like some trees, and the riders go back in the distance, and it's there's kind of like a tree canopy that covers some of the trail. And
I want to say really quick, hats off to Harriman City for being responsive to constituents and having public health in mind and investing in trails.
They're pretty good.
Absolutely gobsmacked that they're the only ones doing it, other than Draper, I guess. But like here in the East
Park City, but
here in the East Bench of Salt Lake, we have some really disappointing, just crappy NIMBY attitudes going on that are just so selfish and short-sighted. So like, hats off to that city because they've developed some really.
I think it's more really the NIMBY good. People that are the problem rather than.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I think the people around here, I think they're pushing for it. But yeah, we just have some really gross, short-sighted, disappointing attitudes prevailing. But hey, ain't that Utah? So, Harriman,
yeah, though. I wasn't there, but... And so... But I do have a few people I just wanted to shout out. No, I guess I have a bias of shouting out some of my pink girls that I rode with, just because I like to kind of see how they're doing, but... Lee Keller got first in the JVA race, and Quinn Profsky was second.
Holy smokes.
And again, these girls are just awesome. They're just so darn classy.
And fast progression there too. Yeah. That's cool to see. Wow.
It's cool to see that progression, that they're getting to that point. I'm just so proud of those girls.
Winning
a JVA
event is big.
It's a big deal. The race, I guess, that... There was a really interesting race that weekend. I wish I could have seen. So Zoe won the JVA the week before and petitioned up to varsity. So she started at the back of varsity. I guess she had a little bit of a crash, got back up and sprinted for second in varsity just behind Alina Furness.
Wow. With a start like that, wow.
Yeah, starting at the back, so...
That's, holy smokes. Wow.
Yeah, right. That's a big deal. That's super cool.
Be interesting to see that battle continue.
A lot of consistency, a lot of kids that were doing well before had another good race. There's just one kid I want to shout out specifically just because like he's just worked his butt off. Seth Sherrington.
Yeah.
I think he got like second.
Holy smokes.
In varsity. Just a workhorse.
Yeah.
And Harriman's a pretty climby course, really. You know, it's up one way, down the other, a lot of windy, twisty turns. But yeah, Seth just
a ridiculous powerhouse of a guy.
He is just so strong and has just worked his butt off.
I'd love to see his watts. He's one where I'd be fascinated to see one of his power profiles. It'd be pretty scary.
And there were other Nika races I didn't really get time to look too much into the results, but
please tell us.
If we miss some cool stories, you know, let us know. Should we debrief a little bit about Point to Point?
Sure. You start.
I start. Okay. I've actually had a lot of people ask me how Point to Point was, and I just think that's so nice that you're showing concern, and I do appreciate it. I had a lot of fun. It's something I like to sign up for just to kind of give me something to stay fit for all year. It was funny. The weekend before Point to Point, in fact, the 2 weeks leading up to Point to Point, I started feeling really, really good. Like I'd go on rides. I would feel really, really good. The Saturday before I did a third of Point to Point just to pre-ride the new section. Like I felt like I couldn't get tired. I just felt awesome. And then I was tapering. Amy Larkin was helping me taper up for it. And I did desperately need to taper. But for some reason, the week of Point to Point, I didn't feel that good. I don't know. It might have been something else wrong with me. Felt pretty weak all week. But throughout the race, I never felt good, but I never felt horrible.
Yeah.
And I just kind of took it super easy. just kind of kept moving, but slow. And I ended up really having a great time. Like by the end of the race, I started feeling really good. The last section of the race, I felt awesome. And I finished it just feeling like I had a really fun ride.
Yeah.
And so, and I felt pretty good after. Like I didn't feel like I was ready to ride Monday. So I don't know.
Because that kind of mirrors my experience from last year. And what I said, I think is true. Like if you pace it well and you can eat enough, you know, like when I remember one of the feelings I had when I finished point to point last year was that it wasn't as bad as people had made it out to be. And it was still comfortably one of the hardest things I've ever done. But I think the like mental load wasn't too bad. Like it was mostly physically hard. But like if you pace it and try to enjoy yourself and you can eat enough, it's not like for people who are considering, if you're kind of on the fence about point to point, if you pace well and eat enough, that's, and assuming, you know, no mechanicals and stuff.
And,
like,
and I fall into the category of people that are just trying to ride it and finish it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'm definitely not trying to race it. My goal was pretty much not to ever fall apart.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So I guess it's different for people with more ambitious goals than mine, but
it's also different for them. Cause like, you know, if you're Riker and you're finishing in, you know, 6 hours and change, that's a totally different event too, you know, cause people who do it in 12 hours and people who do it in six, it's, you know,
I was thinking this fall, I want to do a point to point rodeo where I go out and I ride hard
and just see how far I can get
riding hard.
That'd be interesting. My experience was less good. I had a really good point to point last year. Was the first year I did it. I had a good experience. I don't know. I had a really good start to my season. I've been kind of unwell, to be honest, for the past couple months. I've always kind of struggled with stomach issues and, you know, I said, and I have said a lot of times that I think point to point is totally doable provided you eat enough and pace well. And I think that eat enough is probably the bigger one there. My day started pretty well. Started really well, actually. I think I was in a good position. Felt pretty good climbing, but then around Deer Valley, like my stomach started getting bad. And by the time I was the main climb of the day, we're basically finished descending Johns, and then you just go uphill, and that's like the big, you know, you kind of get up to 9K.
Yeah, that's where the race kind of starts.
The last thing I ate was right before dropping down into Johns. I remember descending Johns, and I got stuck in ridiculous. I also took a wrong turn, which didn't help at all. But I got stuck in some crazy traffic down Johns. Johns took forever. And I like just felt so sick and was like going to got into that next climb. And I was just like, okay, I can't eat now. I'm going to eat in 10. I'm watching my clock and it was rolling. I'm like, give me another 5. I'm really suffering. I can't eat yet. I'm going to eat. And just couldn't get there. And I actually stopped 3 or 4 times on that climb. And just like, my goal was to, I mean, you passed me. We were kind of leapfrogging each other at that point because I'd lost all kinds of time. And I was just like, I'm going to stop until I can kind of just get under control, and then I'll eat some stuff, and then I'll get back on and keep going. And just was like, if I eat it, I'm going to throw up everything in my stomach. And so I kind of told myself, I'm like, you know what? Last year, this was kind of where things felt the darkest. I'll just, you know, I get to PCMR. If I can get to PCMR, I'll have a nice long break on the descent. And so I just crawled up the climb, just like crawling, felt awful. Got to the top, encouraged by being close to the top of the climb, start to push it again, start descending, just balls out on the descent, like set PRs on the first bit of that descent. And last year I kind of started descending and just felt better and better and better. Got to PCMR and then like attacked Armstrong. I had a fairly decent time up Armstrong even last year. But this year, just the whole way down that descent, it was like, worse. And I got to the point where like I was going down, seldom seen, just sitting on my descent, like lowered saddle. And I think I kind of knew at that point, I was like, I'm done. Yeah. And it was, and I'll tell you what, like, that sucked. That was like a bad feel, you know, because that's where like, you know, like I wasn't doing point to point to like, you know, where the course is different. I didn't know what time I was shooting for, but that felt like losing a race. It's like that. I think if you're like a competitive personality, if you're the kind of person who's into endurance athletics, like days like that are rough. But you know what? Like a couple days after that, Jacob and I went and rode up at Snowbird, and it was like feeling like fall and getting back on the bike. I was like, you know, I really do love this. And you have bad days. But
you do have bad days.
You have bad days. And you know, if you never have bad days, you're not challenging yourself enough. And, you know. So if you know, and maybe if you're kind of having, if you had a Nike race that didn't go your way, maybe your point to point day wasn't all that you'd hoped for. Like, there's a long runway.
Do it again.
Do it again.
It won't be the same. Yeah. It,
yeah. You know. So.
Yeah. So had a lot of Maybird riders doing point to point. It was really cool, especially to see some of the post Nike riders.
Yeah.
Out there racing, yeah, and doing. Gosh, they're just so fast. Mm-hmm. Like. It's amazing.
I started with Curtis, and I was like, I'm going to see how long I hang on to Curtis. And the answer was not very long. Curtis was gone. And Curtis was like, he's so
classy.
He's so humble. He was at the starting line. I'm like, oh, what's your strategy? Like, oh, yeah, I don't know. I think I'll just, you know, kind of see how hard I can go. And then I'm looking at Curtis at the front, looking like he's like in a commercial for Specialized or something. And I'm just like,
he is such a cool guy.
He's a freak. Dude, if I had a quarter of Curtis's talent and fitness, I would rub it in your face all day long. I would be nearly as gracious as he is.
Yeah, he is such a good guy. Yeah, but yeah, we had lots of riders doing it. So I actually, Helena came in from Montana to do it. And I started in Round Valley with her and started trying to follow her. And then I realized she's a lot faster than I am. And
she was flying.
I'm kind of like, okay, if I try to hang on to her, I'm not going to finish the day. I'm going to, yeah. Yeah, she was going way fast. And she just crushed it. She flew. She had a great race. One story that was kind of, I thought, really cool. I need to shout out Arlie Pankey. So the Pankey family, they are one of the classiest families on earth. Every member of that family is just as classy as people get. And I started with Arlie, and I was like joking as we were, I forgot to start my Wahoo right at the start. I was like joking that we need to start over because I forgot to start at the right time. I thought it was funny. She's like, I can't shift. And I'm kind of like, what?
Like, she's going along with your bit. Like, oh, my
mom. Yeah, I kind of, exactly. Shift. Yeah, you know, I'm sorry. Turns out she actually couldn't. She pulled over. She couldn't get her bike to shift.
Is this an Axis or a cable?
Axis.
Yeah.
And they found out it was actually her shifter, the little button battery that goes in her shifter.
Finally died after, because the problem is they'll last forever.
They last forever till they don't.
To the point that you kind of forget that it even has a battery in it.
Yeah.
Shoot.
And so someone had to run back and to their car, get a battery.
Thank goodness they had one in their car.
Yeah.
I say just do Round Valley single speed, and hopefully when you come through the other end, someone has a battery for you.
You know, and then I guess they said the hardest part was getting the packaging open. Those are so hard to open. Like, you have to
slice your fingers open. Yeah, like with scissors.
Their cold hands trying to get the packaging open.
Gosh, that's the worst.
And finally they get it in, they get her going. And she started like 5 or 10 minutes after everyone had gone. So she basically was riding around Valley all alone.
I did that last year.
Yeah. You know, so she probably rode around Valley pretty fast, I'm guessing. But anyhow, like, I was worried the whole time. I'm like, okay, Arlie's going to pass me any second now. Luckily, I got to the finish before she passed me, but I wasn't at the finish very long before she finally pulled through, you know, and had to.
I will say the traffic. I remember last year getting through traffic when you're a fast rider who has to start last. Like, that's a major, major, major factor in your day, too. That's really impressive. Wow.
And I do want to publicly thank Dan Kilbert for suggesting that I make a sandwich.
Yes.
Yeah, because he was telling me that he's going to stop, and at one point he's just going to like take some time and enjoy some actual real food. I'm like, that sounds really good. So I actually took two trips to the grocery store to make the sandwich that I thought would taste so good.
You made me one too.
One for Joe too. Yeah, it was good. And at Deer Valley, I actually stopped, ate the sandwich, and just kind of enjoyed it. And I think that really helped later on in the day.
When you've been eating just gels and Rice Krispie Treats and stuff. By the way, Rice Krispie Treats is my call out for best fuel that's ridiculously cheap. But yeah, the sandwich tastes good. I want to throw out a thank you to Kevin Ferdner. It's kind of funny. I was riding along, and I'm riding, and his boy Eli, he was on the green team for at least 2 years, I think three, yeah, right? If not four. and had the POC helmet, and he rides an Epic Evo like mine, but it has the rear triangle doesn't match. They warrantied the rear triangle. They have a blue rear triangle and a white frame. So it's like a very distinctive same hat. And we were riding, and I was like, what's Eli doing here? Like, Eli just left for his mission. Why is Eli? It was like, did Eli come home? Like, Eli in trouble or something? Was Eli doing point-to-point? That's odd. So I'm like, yo, Eli. He's like, oh, it's Kevin. I was like, you know, not a lot of people get mistaken. I mean, would anyone mistake, you know, you for me? Probably not, right? You know, that's got to be a huge compliment for Mr. Kevin there. And he and I ended up riding for, and he wasn't even racing. He was just like a roving course helper or whatever.
Oh, was he? Oh. Okay.
And he's like, oh, I've never done this before. I'm like, you're going really fast for never having done this before. That's a really confident pace. He was hauling, absolutely hauling, uphill and down. But yeah, that was my funny thing from the day. I was like, why is Eli here?
Yeah, we had lots of Maybird riders there. Like Grant Hulsberg did it like a couple days before he left on a mission.
Yep.
Super cool day, super fun. I had great conditions, great temperatures.
We need to call out, obviously, he gets called a lot. Riker had a really crazy, crazy good day. It's escaping me because it's been a week what place he was. He was a top 10.
He was like seventh or eighth or something.
Yeah. Like he was up there with like Sam Sweetser and those guys, like the real legends of point to point. He's just having a crazy good season. I don't know if we were gonna, are we ready to bridge from point to point?
Well, yet? Not yet. So this isn't the only time he's gonna come up again. Yeah, Riker will come up again. So, just super, super cool day. I did. There's something I thought was cool and heartwarming. So Andrew was going to Salt Lake Community College, taking some classes at SLIC, and for like his fitness credit, he signed up for a mountain bike class.
Kind of someone who speaks Spanish takes Spanish class because it's just like the easiest day ever.
Yeah. And so he signed, and they would actually like the group would like meet out places and go on rides and stuff. And there was a kid that joined this mountain bike class. His name was Daniel. And
his name is Dan. He survived, by the way.
Okay.
Point's a hard race, and you know, sometimes you don't make it.
Yeah. So I think is he from Mexico? I don't know where he's from, but
no clue. I've never met him.
Oh, you never met him. Okay.
You know as much as I do.
Okay. So
I'm your oldest son. This is Andrew's a different one.
Okay. So anyway, he had signed up for this class about 6 months ago and just fell in love with riding bikes. Just loved mountain biking. Went out and he bought like a hardtail, 11 speed hardtail, you know, nothing, a little outdated, but just loved it. Was just having so much fun. He signed up for point to point,
which isn't like, I would not advise.
No.
Like you and I would never tell someone to do that. That's especially even like on a hardtail too. Like that's actually genuinely a lot harder too. Like that's hefty.
But he went out and he actually pre-rode the whole thing in
a day.
No. In different sections. Oh, okay. He was able to pre-ride the whole thing. But on race day, he had a really bad crash, broke a brake lever.
Yeah.
Was having to go down with just a front brake. And I guess he got cut bad enough. He's going to need stitches. Had a really hard day. And I actually, It was cute because I got to meet his family and they came up to support him, but they had actually never been up to the ski resort before and had no idea where to go and they missed him at the first stop.
Yeah.
So Andrew fed him at the first stop and, you know, I think he finished around 8 o'clock at night. It was starting to get dark when he rolled through.
Which in a funny way is more impressive.
Exactly.
Like the thing is with point to point, like take nothing away from Riker. Riker's only out there for 6 hours. That's not even a full workday, Riker. You lazy butt, right? But kind of what you're saying before, being out on a bike for 12 hours, and then not just out on a bike, but out on a single track for 12 hours is hefty. That's all, and on a hardtail too, that beats the, if you ride a hardtail from Park City for 3 hours, that beats the crap out of you. Do that, you know, four times. That's wild.
Yeah. And whenever I look at the point-to-point results and I see the people that are like 12 hours or 13 hours or 14 hours.
Freaking good for you, dude.
Way to go. Because you know that that day didn't go well.
No. So that's, I mean, that's, you know, huge.
And that they're able to still finish is just super impressive. And I was super touched by Daniel being able to finish that race. And he's actually a pretty fit kid.
Oh, you'd have to be.
Mountain biking's new, but he's endurance sports isn't new to him. So, I mean, but I think it was super cool. And someone from the team has actually donated a really nice bike to Daniel.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No way. Yeah. No way.
It was in our garage a couple days
ago. What kind of bike?
It was a Scott Spark.
This was like one of my first bikes there.
Yeah, that's a sweet bike.
Very cool.
And if you know who donated, you wouldn't be that surprised.
Yeah, we got a lot of cool. We got so many people on this team that just make me feel like a terrible person. I'm like, wow, the bar is so high for how good a person you can be.
So he's bravo. Super. Yeah, so that was super.
I want to throw it to, on a personal note, a couple other, Xander was out there too. He had a really impressive day. I want to throw out my buddy, Isaac Boyden, I think 2-time guest on the podcast. He's been putting in just disgusting amounts of work all year.
Did you see his ride yesterday?
Yeah. So I was good. So I'm kind of getting his, he funny. Cause you mentioned the brake thing also, had his, right brake lever just completely go out like in Round Valley. And I do want to say quick disclaimer. I would probably not tell you to go and ride for several more hours with only one brake.
I would tell you too, that is a good reason to end your race.
Hoping for, you know, cause you have those days where you're just hoping for like a legit mechanical. That's one of them, right? Yeah. Like that's one where I'm like, no, you get a flat. I'm like, hey, fix your flat. Get up, get back there. Broken brake lever. You can't fix on the side.
You shouldn't finish a race with a broken brake lever.
This is true. It's also true that it's impressive, right? So I do want to call out, and I want to call out Isaac's has put in the adjective I'm going to use is disgusting amount of work. This year. And then this week, a week after point to point, he rode to Evanston and back, which is over 200 miles, his own kind of alternative Lotija, which is ridiculous. I don't know if he's made this public or not. He's actually out of the bike industry. So if Isaac was your guy at Contender, unfortunately, I think he is gone, having moved on, but I wanted to call him out too. Lots of cool performances.
Yeah. And then that brings us to this week. This weekend we had, well, we had some Nika races and we had Lotija. Should we do Lotija first?
Do Lotija first. So Riker, second call out of the day, won his age group at Lotija, which, not surprising. It's almost hard when you have so many good days. It almost, it's like I want to give them all the recognition they deserve, but then I just kind of feel like, oh, Riker crushed it in another race. Whoop de doo. Lotija is a pretty big. Lotija is like a race that like people who don't know bike stuff still know. Like it's kind of like if you wanted to be in the public consciousness, it's the race you'd win. Like no one knows about point to point, right? Unless you ride bikes. But Lotija is a legit event. I think some people kind of have this idea that like Lotija is like, because it's a lot of people who aren't necessarily bikey will do it. And it's kind of like it's a benchmark event just for people in Utah, even if you're not in the cycling community.
Well, and can't you do it as like a relay too?
You can, exactly. So like it's a big fat thing and it garners a really high level of competition. Like Lotija, I do want to do Lotija.
Yeah. I want to do it. We should do it sometime.
It's the road race I do. You know, it seems like it's probably one of the, you don't even get a lot of crashes and stuff, you know.
Maybe we should do it.
I think we
another shout out for Lotija is Solomon Perkins.
Did he?
Yeah, isn't that cool? He did really well. Like, I think 9.5 hours or something like
that. Holy smokes. Yeah.
I don't know for sure, but it's something around there. But yeah, that, and for those of you who remember, Solomon's the one that this is his first Nika season ever.
Which is hilarious. That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah. And he's racing like freshman A and
just cleaning up.
Yeah. And I see Solomon out riding all the time. The kid just looks like a pro.
Yeah.
He just has
the cause and effect.
You know? He has the pro posture when he's out riding. He just looks so.
Some people just have the look. You and I don't look natural on a bike. We look out of place on a bike. And then there's some people where it looks like they were born on one, and he's one of those people. Yeah. So, enjoy the fruits of your labor and the amazing genes, Solomon. Jensen twins were out there too. I saw they posted
Really?
Those
cool.
Yeah. Which is cool. Team veterans.
Uncle John was there.
A couple of people. Yes. Dr. John Clayton, for all your plastic surgery needs, was out there. He crushed. He's been, oh my gosh. He cycles through cycling. He does this 3 or 4 things. He's even beekeeping now. College of John. Do you think John listens? Does John listen to this?
I doubt it.
Good job, John. Oh my gosh, there's so many others. I'm trying to think. Who are we? We're missing some obvious people.
Yeah, we're missing some people.
We will come back with some revisions next week with people we missed, I'm sure.
Then we had some more Nika racing this weekend. I was gone all day Saturday. I didn't go to a race, but it seemed like kind of the usual cast of characters had really good races. Way to go. Consistency pays off, you know?
Yeah.
But there is one in particular that I just did want to draw a little attention to, just shout out. And this is just one I happened to notice. So a couple weeks back, I went to the Harriman race for Region 3. And Lauren Montague, who has been riding a lot, she comes from a bike family. She's, you know, Kyson's her brother.
Her older brother is arguably responsible for a lot of Riker's success that we were joking about a second ago.
I'll be honest, she had a rough race out there, you know, and I think she was super discouraged. Mm-hmm. It just something was off. I don't know what happened. She just had a really, really bad race.
It happens. It's a thing that happens. It happens to some people, more than others, but it just happens.
And it sucks when it does happen. It's hard.
Yeah.
So fast forward 2 weeks to yesterday, she just had a killer race, like night and day. I don't know what she did different, but she just crushed it. So I just want to shout her out for being able to just pick up where she left off and just let the bad race be behind her and move forward and have some good results. And I think the lesson there is, just because you have a bad race or bad races, kind of like Kate Courtney too, you know, it doesn't mean it's the end of the line. Don't give up hope. Keep pushing, keep doing what's right, keep following the system, and it can pay off. So way to go, Lauren. Yeah.
And I think it's true too that, like, it's okay to feel discouragement or any other number of bad emotions, but what's interesting and what's meaningful is what you choose to do with it. You know, because if you care about this, you know, if we accept the premise that, like, people care about this and that we're not perfect, if we accept that those two things are true, you're going to have days where you feel discouraged because you care and things didn't go your way. You know, if, like, you're never discouraged, that also means you don't really care. And if you're going to put this amount of work into it and make the lifestyle sacrifices that you have to be good at this sport, like, you're going to have, like, I kind of don't know, this is a point, you know? Yeah, good for her for not, you know, like I said, it's interesting to see what people do on the other side of that. Like, do you give up or do you, you know, keep banging your head against the wall until the results come? So good for her, man.
And I think, gosh, we could just do like an hour of shout outs, but I think the last thing that we need to mention is we had a couple in our bike family that strapped on some running shoes this weekend and did something very crazy.
To finish with arguably the most impressive, can I take this one? Cause he's mine. I'm going to take credit.
We had two that did it.
Well, I want to say to start, because he broke a record in doing it. Mark Nelson, who's one of my green boys, probably the longest running green boy ever. Mark Nelson became the youngest ever finisher of the Wasatch 100. If you don't know what the Wasatch 100 is, lucky you. It is a 100-mile running race, and that's grotesque. That is unbelievable. Like, point to point is a 75-mile mountain bike race, which is insane. Point to point, or is what? I mean, my math's bad. 25% longer? Does that make sense? Probably not. Nope, that's not how percents work. But anyway, it's considerably longer, and it's on foot. And Mark did it in 33 hours, which is really, really fast. Like, not only is he doing it, but, like, my understanding is that's a very, very respectable time. And we also had
Tate Larkin
pulled out the crazy Larkin endurance athletics genes and pulled that off too. Tate has some history of doing things like this. I wonder if, do you think it was hard for him? if you didn't, go back and listen from maybe a year-ish ago, maybe a little less. We did an episode with the Larkin boys
when they went to Croatia.
Their Croatia insane. That was a fever dream of an episode. That was the weirdest, craziest thing ever. I mean, it feels kind of cheap to say shout out to those guys, because that's a Herculean effort. But I do want to say, for those of you, if you ever do kind of get to the point where you're not sure if riding bikes is lighting your fire, like, this sport does prepare you to do a lot of other cool, you have a whole cool menu of endurance athletic options around here. I don't understand people who do running, but it's a thing that you can do. I'm not going to take a whole lot of credit for Mark's success, because he's a ridiculously hard worker. And again, it's just one of the, how often are you just driving on Wasatch Boulevard and you see Mark? You know, so super, super cool. Very cool.
Okay.
So we missed stuff for sure. Please let us know. We for sure missed stuff. We for sure missed something like crazy.
Yeah, we missed something super important.
You're going to text me later and I'll be like, oh my gosh, we missed whatever. And I'll be like, wow, we're so stupid. And you're like, I know. And I'm like, yeah, that's not surprising to anyone. Anyway, what is our episode about today?
Okay, so our topic today is on non-functional overreaching.
Ooh, I kind of know what this is. We've visited this before.
We have.
This is a thing some of you are probably doing.
Yes, I think all of us dip our toes in here from time to time. Really, like most people would probably think we're talking about overtraining, but
these are related. They're concepts, related, but they are different things.
Yeah, and we'll kind of clarify that. So, overtraining is a word that people use to describe like lots of things.
Overtraining is like a word, like you, if you're new to this, it's maybe a term you would apply more broadly than you should to talk about some things that are in the same nebulous cloud of concepts, but are not the same.
Yeah, like I think people might use the term overtraining to describe like maybe just having like a couple really big weeks and you probably did a bit too much and you're too tired
and you hit, yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, we kind of overtrained going into this race. I almost want to say on the front end, if like overtraining is a concept, I almost question when you look at the amount of volume that professional like world tour cyclists are doing these days, like it's hard to imagine what amount of training you'd have to be doing to just overtrain. Which I hope is a good lead into what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, because I think a lot of times training gets the blame, but it's really
right.
Just kind of part of the equation.
Yeah.
That's.
I love how you're trying not to spoil this. We could probably explain this in 5 minutes, but we're going to take 25.
So, okay, yeah. So maladaptive training is kind of a term to describe like training that you're not benefiting from. You're not, it's like you're doing training.
Badly adaptive training.
It's, you're doing training, but it's not making you faster. And non-functional overreaching is an example of that. Overtraining is an example of that. There's several different. So, and we did a pretty good, gosh, a while back, we did a complete episode on overtraining. Go back and listen to that. We're going to be talking about some different things. There might be a little bit of overlap, but there are different ways we can do maladaptive training. And the first one I just want to throw out there just to show a little bit of contrast is like undertraining. You know, like if you're training too infrequently or you're like not stressing yourself enough when you train, you know, if your training consists of walking around the block, walking around the block every other day, all year, every year, you're really not going to get better at walking around the block. It's going to maintain some fitness and it's going to keep you healthy. It's going to be good, but that's not going to really prepare you to run a marathon.
Undertraining is a word we almost never use. Like the only time you'd ever use it would be like someone who has a specific object. Like if Jonas Vingegaard getting injured leading up to the tour and then not performing as well on the tour, you'd say, well, he was undertrained. Like he just didn't have time because he was recovering from an injury. Like almost everyone on the street is undertrained, right? Like they're like,
well, what? Yeah, you know, exactly. Like
it's almost not a useful term.
Like I did running group last winter, but I'm not ready to do a marathon.
Right. Exactly. So, you are undertrained for a marathon.
So, and I just wanted to, and it's really not a commonly used,
I've actually heard anyone use it in the wild.
I just kind of want to throw it out there to just that could be a reason why it is a reason why some people aren't getting the results they want is because,
yeah,
they're not putting in enough work to get the outcome that they're hoping for.
Yeah.
You know, so that's not really what we're talking about today though. Now there's a term functional overreaching, and functional overreaching
it's called training
is good.
Yeah.
Functional overreaching is what we're working for. And that's when, you know, we talk about all the time when you push beyond your current limits, your current capabilities, and then you let yourself recover.
Your body builds back better.
Right? And then you adapt, you're better. And so that's functional overreaching. You know, you push yourself beyond your current limits, but then you rest, recover, your body rebuilds itself better. And then you kind of start off on a new baseline. And that's training 101 right there. And that's functional overreaching. Now, non-functional overreaching is is when you overreach, but you overreach beyond your current capabilities of recovery and adaptation. So you're doing more overreaching than you have the capacity to recover for and adapt for. So the difference between overreaching, one of the biggest difference though between non-functional overreaching and actual overtraining is non-functional overreaching is something that you can overcome in a few days or a few weeks. It's something that's just kind of temporary, yeah. Whereas actual overtraining syndrome is usually season ending and perhaps even career ending.
I believe the last time we talked about it, we also it's actually relatively rare. Is that not
yeah,
true?
Yeah, it is.
It's not a common, like when people say, oh, he's a little overtrained. Like I hear every Nike dad say that when his kid's not performing.
It just flows out of your mouth better than, oh, he's non-functionally overreached.
Well, and I think it's one of those things that we just understand has a colloquial meaning that isn't, it's yeah. true scientific meaning, right? Like you say, like we talk about this in my class, you know, like, oh, I'm starving. Like, no, you're not, but I get it, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little hyperbolic maybe.
Exactly. So overtraining, most of us aren't dealing on a level that's really even a possibility.
I wish I had the kind of time where that could be the problem, right?
But
right, doing that amount of writing.
Non-functional overreaching, I guarantee anyone that's serious in this sport has done it at some point.
Yeah.
You know, and you might be in a state of it right now or something.
Yeah.
You know? So non-functional overreaching is what we'll really be talking about today. Let's talk real quick, though, about overtraining syndrome, just so we have an understanding of it. The term syndrome is, do you know what the definition of syndrome is?
I believe a syndrome is when you have like a loosely defined set of symptoms that don't have a totally agreed upon cause, but if you have X out of Y symptoms, then you say that you have like what is relevant, like irritable bowel syndrome. Like it doesn't look the same for everybody. It might be several different things. It's usually it's usually something that they can't do much about. There's almost never like a pill that you take that fixes it. If your condition ends with a syndrome, it's almost like a scientific cop out for like, yeah. You guys all fall into this bucket where it sort of looks alike and good luck with that. And, you know,
I like that definition. Yeah. It's really just a group of symptoms that kind of occur together and,
we know they're related.
If you've got this, and this, you might have this, but yeah. Who knows? Because yep. this, and this could mean something
else. It's kind of your doctor going,
Yeah. You know, it's not like cancer where you could just identify
it
cancer.
It has a very specific name, yeah. Classification, or it's not like you have, it's like, hey, you have tuberculosis. Like, that's what you have. You know, it's like you have this kind of crappy whatever, you know, that we don't really know what to do about.
Yeah, so overtraining syndrome is really a result of chronic non-functional overreaching. We could call it NFOR, which is easier to say.
If we were really cool, we'd call it that.
And like I say, the big difference between the two, well, one's chronic, one's more temporary. If you're non-functionally overreached, you can a few days of rest, and in severe cases, a couple weeks of rest would resolve it. Overtraining syndrome, it doesn't resolve that quickly. It's more of a long-term season-ending type thing. And when you're overtrained, you actually will have identifiable hormone imbalances. You'll have higher cortisol levels, lower testosterone levels. You'll have a weakened immune system. You'll get sick easier. You'll actually have impaired cognitive function. And something that's interesting, you probably don't hear a whole lot, is that there a lot of times overtraining happens because of too much intensity, and a lot of times intensity gets blamed on overtraining, but there's actually two different types of overtraining. There's sympathetic overtraining, which is because of too much high intensity training, and like weightlifters and strength trainers will get this all the time. People that do a lot of high intensity track type training get that. And there's also parasympathetic overtraining, which is, it's also overtraining, but it's more from like the endurance athletes will get from excessive volume. And it's interesting because like with sympathetic overtraining, they'll have an increased resting heart rate. They'll be more irritable. Whereas with parasympathetic overtraining, they have a decreased like a depressed heart rate, and they will be more lethargic and kind of not care. You know, they won't be grumpy. They'll just kind of like won't care and be apathetic. Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting that they kind of have some opposite characteristics there.
Hmm.
But it does seem that like overtraining syndrome is more rare because it seems like just people are aware of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's like training methods have changed. The focus on rest has been greatly increased. And I think this happened more when people would be motivated to train. They wanted to be in the Olympics, but they didn't have access to knowledgeable coaching. And, you know, if you want to learn about exercise physiology and training, you have to go get a book from the library.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just seems like common sense, like, well, if I just train more, I'll get faster. And,
yeah,
you know, I think that people are just more aware of this. So it doesn't seem to happen as much.
Honestly, like most people are dying for more time to do their sport. It's kind of rare to get the person whose life is in the place where it's, I mean, like I said, you could theoretically dig yourself into the hole on a small amount of time, but I think this is probably usually happening with people who have, you know, some time to throw at this too on the endurance side.
Yeah. I think it's usually happening for people that are preparing for like Olympics and, just dedicating their entire life to the sport. They might take some risks that don't pay off.
Yeah. I know you hate it every time I get on this horse. I'll keep this under 60 seconds. This is another time that I want to remind you that there is no moral dimension to like training. And then I think I had this idea in high school that it was just like, if I suffer the most, then the universe will reward me because I suffered and the suffering is the point. But it's like, in theory, it would be like you want to suffer the minimal amount to get the maximal result.
Exactly.
Right?
You want the most bang for your buck.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And I think that like congratulations, you have the ability to completely put yourself in a hole. You could probably ride yourself literally to death in 10 minutes on a trainer, like if you had the willpower to do it. But that wouldn't make you faster. That would make you not want to ride your bike for a month.
Yeah.
You know, so like for people doing this, just remember like, I would look for bang for your buck, you know, because in theory, if you could win the Olympics on 5 hours of training a week, that's what you should do. You should win the Olympics and have time to have a job and a girlfriend. Like, you know, that's not the case. And the truth is that you do need to have an incredible amount of willpower, especially with as competitive as it is now, if you want to make these big accomplishments. But just like being miserable and hurting are a means to an end. And I think if you like people who like rejoice in or like venerate suffering don't know what suffering is. And if you really just wanted to suffer the most, turn on your stove and stick your hand on it. Like, you don't even have to buy a bike. The suffering isn't the point, but the suffering is something that you should be willing to endure for a payoff, right?
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely. You don't want to, I mean, there's diminishing returns and you really do want
to find the work does good things for you, but it isn't the point.
And it does take a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so one thing, just kind of a spoiler alert, the only cure for overtraining syndrome is rest.
Can't work your way through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Rest is the cure. You know,
yep.
There's kind of the, almost all you need to know about that, you know, taking care of yourself and resting. So now I have an analogy that I like to use that like overtraining is a road. It's not like a specific destination. It's like this road that you can get on. Now, the beginning of the road, the start of the road is non-functional overreaching. The end of the road is actual overtraining syndrome. And you're going to find yourself, you know, as athletes that take this seriously, you're going to find yourself on that road from time to time. You really should avoid the road.
Yeah.
You should get as close to that road as you can get without actually getting on the road.
But the practical reality is you're going to hit it sometimes.
Yeah, you're going to get on the NFOR, did I say that right? Non-functional overreaching end of the road from time to time. No, the point is when you're on that road to recognize it and turn around as quick as you can, because the farther you get down that road, the longer it takes to get back. And so you really don't want to get on to the end of the road, because that's just, it's gonna, you're probably not gonna do the sport the rest of your life if you do.
Well, it's just a bummer. It's almost like you tipped your piggy bank over, right? Like, it's just like, yeah, money's falling out of the piggy bank. You worked for that money. It's a bummer that you're losing. It's like a bummer that you're putting in effort that you're not getting paid for. Or it's like, actually, better one, you're working, you forgot to clock in, right? You're gonna have to work and you forgot to clock in, and your boss isn't gonna pay you till you clock in. And it's a bummer to be working if you're not clocked in. You should be getting something out of this. Again, if you want to just suffer for the sake of suffering, go to a stove and stick your hand on it.
Yeah. So, yeah, so non-functional overreaching is, like we said, when you're training, but you're not getting faster. You're not getting the benefits from your training. But it resolves relatively quickly within a few days or, in some cases, a couple weeks. When one thing that I think is important to point out, though, is that if it seems like your performance isn't where it should be, I would highly recommend meeting with a medical professional just to rule out some other things. And, you know, because there's other conditions that that almost feel like overtraining or non-functional overreaching. Like, you know, you could have like, you could be anemic.
You have mono.
That's mono. Yeah. All, they could have viruses. That's
shockingly common. You get some blood work done, especially for, I feel like girls, there's a lot more issues that you guys can run into.
Yeah.
Like that you hear about
thyroid issues. There's a few things that might be good just to rule out first. And this is just kind of a side note. I just wanted to kind of shout someone out really quick. So I don't consider myself, like, I don't really think of myself as a smart person. I mean, I'm okay.
Yeah, spot on. Nail it.
But
first time of the whole show.
But I do think that I'm fairly good at recognizing smart people and admiring them. And the other day I was having some like discomfort when I was riding my bike in my chest, and I thought it had to do with my lungs, and I thought I might be getting asthma. You know, so I reached out to Tim LeClaire, and I don't know if you guys know this, but both Tim and his wife Laurie are pulmonologists. So I always thought, man, that would be. I wonder what their dinner conversations are like, you know. But anyhow, so I got an appointment with Laurie, and I was so impressed. She is one of the sharpest people I have ever met in my life.
Okay, not to take anything away from Dr. LeClaire. I love how you're having this moment where you're like, I'm so good at recognizing smart people. I saw this doctor and I'm like, you know what? This pulmonologist is probably smart. And you're like, guys, I am so good at recognizing smart people. When sometimes they'll have these two letters in front of their name and then a dot and then their last name. And instead of calling him Mrs. LeClaire, you call her Dr. LeClaire. It's this crazy thing.
Yeah. No, but I just was so impressed with her, and she was just so thorough, and she wasn't like just listening to my symptoms to decide what I had. I went in and got some tests done first, you know, so, and then she was able to like look at the test results and decide, you know, it turns out I didn't actually have asthma. It was something else. And, she gave me some really, really helpful advice. And I was just so impressed with how thorough and how thoughtful and how it made me realize that, like, seems like so many of us just jump onto like WebMD and try
ChatGPT. What are these symptoms?
Try to diagnose our problems through the internet. And I've just found in my life that just always gets me barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's a substitute for sitting down face to face with someone that was smart enough to get through medical school. And I think there's just a huge value in that. So
yeah, doctors kind of went out of fashion. I'm hoping they come back into fashion sooner than later.
Yeah, I get your little reference there, but
yeah.
Yeah. So if something seems off, go get it checked out. Like the worst case scenario is that you wasted a copay,
yeah,
and that you found out you're fine.
It's probably $60 well spent. I want to say, because we're already on the tangent. Also, we're at the time of year. Don't get sick. We have cool methods that will help you avoid getting some of the common diseases. I think you should take advantage of them. Getting sick will not help you. When you had COVID, that COVID nerfed your performance, did it not?
It did for a while.
Yeah. Like it's like we don't live in the 13th century. We no longer poop in our wells. Like, you have some cool tools at your disposal. You should take advantage of them and avoid getting sick. I've chosen a profession where I'm going to get sick, even if I take advantage of those tools. And I wish I didn't. And that's genuinely the biggest downside of my job. So, like, do whatever you can. Wash your hands. don't kiss the wrong people, you know, you're not smooching in cars in the Wendy's parking lot on Friday night.
Try not to get sick.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't help your performance.
Go see the
either.
Doctor. Don't get sick.
Yeah. But yeah, so, go see doctors. Doctors are smart
doctors
people.
Are great.
Instagram influencers usually aren't.
Yes.
So yeah.
Supplements are dumb. Okay, let's carry on.
Okay.
Let's carry on. If you want to raise your money to feel better, I will burn
totally
some sage
forgot
for
where
you.
I was
My
at.
Venmo is Joe Draper too. Just send me money instead. That will genuinely go farther in the world.
Okay. So anyhow, we're non-functional overreaching.
Yes.
Okay. So there's different reasons that you could be, you know, you're putting in the work, but you don't feel like you're getting faster. A bunch of different reasons that could be happening. There's a bunch of reasons you could be non-functionally overreaching. And some of them would be one is, and probably the most common could be excessive intensity. Another one could be excessive volume.
Yep.
Yeah. Another one is maybe you've ramped up too fast. You know, you've kind of like this is what, how like a new cyclist could.
Yeah. If it's year one, 20 hour training, we probably isn't for you.
Yeah. You go from like 5 hours to 10 hours to 15 hours to 20 hours. That's, you're progressing way too fast. Your body's not
going to have a bad time.
Your body's not going to catch up to that. Diet's a huge part of it.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
You've got to have a diet that can make the adaptations you're dreaming of possible.
Yep.
Life stress is a huge part of it. You know, it's hard to, well, we'll talk about this a little more in a second, but, you know, when we're stressed out, it's hard to make adaptations while we're stressed.
I want to point out too, it's okay for you to have non-bike stress in your life. You should be trying to have a career outside of cycling. You should be trying to get good grades. You should be trying to have relationships with people. Like, those things entail some amount of stress. Give yourself some grace. You know, if you've got the ACT coming up and you're spending more time studying than, you know, you want to, like, that's
well,
okay.
And I think that's sometimes. Something that would make me different than like a typical Nike rider is because, like,
you couldn't pass the ACT anyways, you know.
It's because like the bike doesn't seem like a source of stress to me. It's not something I stress. It's like my reward at the end of the day. It's kind of my,
well, you and I don't care about our racing. So I don't know why you guys listen to this podcast, but like, I do want to say, I don't think the bike should ever be a true source of stress for you.
You know, I'm hoping it's a source of joy.
Yeah.
And that you love the process.
Can
and
be nervous about races. I think if it's a chronic stress, a source of stress, there are other, if you're going to be stressed, make money being stressed. Don't spend money being stressed. That's a weird choice.
Yeah. So, you know, and so like some people, like if you've got like a really hectic, stressful life, they can non-functionally overreach in just a few hours a week.
I have felt this. I kind of wonder if this is what's happening to me now. I'm riding a pitiful amount. And I feel like garbage. So like, I don't know. That makes me feel better. Thank you for validating me.
You're welcome.
Are we actually recording, or is this just for me? Is this just like, you're like trying to make me feel better?
Another reason for, you know, for your training not benefiting you is maybe just training monotony. And by that, I kind of mean like, if you do the same, like I gave that example, the guy that walks around the block once every other day.
We're all so guilty of this.
You know,
I have my same two rides that I do. I have my road ride, my mountain bike ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're just providing the same stress over and over again, you're not going to adapt to it anymore.
No.
You know, the stress needs to be somewhat novel.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, go back and listen to our last episode. We kind of talked about like, sometimes you have to train things that you don't want to train.
Yep.
Cause once you've kind of like what happens a lot of times is like, if you do the same workout over and over again, you kind of max out your genetic potential in that particular area. And you need to branch off and focus on other aspects of your fitness.
Yep.
And yeah, you know, that can be hard to do, but I would say the two biggest reasons for NFOR is one is your intensity distribution and the other is insufficient recovery.
Yep. I'd imagine the latter probably more commonly than the former.
Do you think
we have plenty of both?
I almost put those as equals.
Interesting.
Yeah. So let's talk about, and this might kind of explain why. Okay, let's talk about your autonomic nervous system. So we've got the sympathetic mode and the parasympathetic mode. Now, sometimes it's kind of cool because like there these different modes, they have completely they're opposite but they have completely different roles, but they're both complementary. So sometimes one will be dominant while the other kind of takes a back seat. Well, and then other times the other one will be dominant while the other one takes kind of a back seat. And so one will be active while the other one's inhibited. Now the sympathetic mode, you know, we talk about that. That's kind of more of a fight or flight type scenarios. That releases hormones and neurotransmitters that sends, it makes it so it sends more blood to our working muscles. It diverts blood from our gut. So it limits digestion. Our heart rate increases. And when we're in a sympathetic mode, it signals adaptations. Now, the parasympathetic mode is kind of just the opposite, really. Our heart rate slows down. Our digestion increases. And when we're in this mode, it's when we're allowed for adaptations to take place. So one kind of signals the adaptations, the other allows adaptations to take place. So obviously, you don't, like, one's not better and you want to spend all your time in one. They're both necessary and they both complement each other. And so we've talked a lot about, you know, in the past, like when you explain training 101 to people, where you talk about, okay, so you stress the system, you know, you kind of push beyond your current limits, and then you recover. And after you recover, in like, we'll say 3 days to 3 weeks, your body will make adaptations to that stress. And then you kind of start back on a new level, a higher level. And that's kind of like training 101, right? I think everyone's kind of familiar with that. Like, when you explain it that way, what if someone actually trained that way in real life? Like say you did this really, really hard workout that just clobbered yourself. You did a lot of damage. You know, it took a couple days to recover from it. And then you waited, say, 2 weeks for those adaptations to show up. And then you trained again at a slightly higher level. And then you just kept repeating that every 2 weeks. Like, how do you think that would work as a training program?
Not particularly well.
Probably not.
That's almost what I'm doing right now.
I think it would obviously be better than not doing anything. But I don't think that that's how most of the fast people get fast.
What if that's been Nino's secret this whole time?
And so, yeah, you really can't spread out your key workouts quite like that. So some accumulated fatigue is necessary. You know, those workouts are going to overlap while your body's constantly adapting, and you know, you're getting your recovery, but some of the adaptations are overlapping and everything's just kind of layering in, and probably a really complex way that's not super easy to explain, but some accumulated fatigue is absolutely necessary. The key is that we need to make sure that we're managing that accumulated fatigue and that it's appropriate.
We say managing it like scheduling it and recovering from it, essentially, right?
Yeah, yeah. Recovery is exactly what I mean by managing that accumulated fatigue. And, you know, we do that in a couple ways. You know, you kind of have your daily day or two off a week that you take, you know, and usually that day is just so you're fresh for quality workouts. Then you also have, you know, your scheduled rest weeks where, you know, 1 week out of the month, you do about half the normal amount of training you do, and that's just the hope that, you know, if you've got some accumulated fatigue, you can kind of shed a little bit of that. And then that's the reason we encourage like mid-season breaks and taking a little bit of an off-season.
And we'll say, too, we're not trying to send people to the Olympics. We're trying to, like, make people ride bikes for the next 40 years. And so we're always okay to be like, hey, if we're leaving 5% on the table, but we're always operating in this safe zone where you're not, like, blowing yourself up and this keeps being fun and you do it forever, like, that's more our goal. I will say, like, if you are Tadej Pogačar's coach, you're trying to throttle every last bit of performance and gain out of it, I'd imagine, and are, you know, like, probably more willing.
I think
to,
that they,
do you think
I'm going to disagree.
So you think that's true, because if you're blowing him up, that's,
yeah,
that's money. That,
yeah.
Like,
I honestly think that the more advanced the athletes are, the more concerned they are with this.
Interesting.
Like, they're definitely pushing hard and they're doing hard workouts and they're doing a lot of work, but they're taking their rest way more seriously than you or I take our rest.
That's true. They also, and, have, the, they also have some cool tools and like staff that allow them to do that too.
Well, they've got some staff, but they don't really have a whole lot that we don't have access to. And I think one of the biggest things is, and this was the next point I was going to get to, is managing this accumulated fatigue is, you know, yeah, scheduled breaks are great. You know, if you're following your training plan, hopefully there's some time that you should take off. And, but what's even more important is just knowing when you need a little extra time.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just so many kids that just trust whatever's written on their training plan. There's just so many kids.
We're just afraid of not writing.
Yeah. And sometimes just to manage that accumulated fatigue, you might just need an extra day or two off here and there.
Yep.
And that's something that you're going to know better than your dad's going to know, than your coach is going to know, than I'm going to know. It's something that you need to be aware of and know. You know, you can know when you need, you can push a little bit harder, and you also need to know when you might need a little extra time off and time
if,
to.
If you're second guessing your radar on this, by the way, like, if you're listening to this, you are almost certainly the type of person who is, like, very comfortable pushing yourself and has great personal discipline. Like, I would say in a lot of ways, if you're actually feeling that way, that's like a canary in the coal mine. You really need a day off, because you're the kind of person who's almost certainly subconsciously excusing way more fatigue and discomfort than the average person would tolerate before they want some time off their feet, you know?
Yeah. And if you're the type of rider that has been doing aerobic endurance athletics all winter,
and
you know,
you've been
racing in the spring, you've been training consistently all year. If you took like 3 days off during the NICA season, it's not going to hurt you.
It's just not the
end of
the world.
It's not. Like, really, even if you didn't need it, which isn't the case.
But let's say you're totally wrong. You're just being lazy. You don't need that time off at all. You're fine.
You're fine.
Yeah.
You've got enough fitness built up that you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
So if you fall into this camp of kids that have just been riding consistently all season long, and you're just kind of feeling a little bit off, it's amazing what 3 days stuck together, 3 consecutive days of top quality rest can do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and during those days, you just, rather than like worry about training, you can worry about other things, you know, like you can worry about sleeping a little bit more, eating top quality food.
Just, you're a grown up, trying to get your oil change, you know, doing all the other.
I mean, I would focus on resting rather than doing errands and so forth.
Well,
but,
yeah, if you're off your feet, you get my point. This is your daily reminder that going on a hike is not a rest day thing. That's not resting.
Yes.
Like, yeah. I mean, get your paperwork done if you're a grown up, you know, get that kind of like, you know.
But one thing I was going to say too is just really like when you're taking this 3 day little break, a little recharge, reset, really try to avoid extra stress. Try to keep your stress levels low. And so a second ago, I mentioned that I think that kind of how we distribute our intensity is just about as important as how well we're resting. So I want to talk about that for just a second, because, so, you know, we talked just a second ago about how, like, you know, in training 101, you kind of stress the system, you rest, you adapt, you rest, you recover, you adapt, you know, that's kind of training 101, but not all adaptations come from signaling the sympathetic nervous system.
Some come from the parasympathetic.
Is that well, what we're going with this? So this is where zone 2 training comes into the picture, because zone 2 adaptations are different than the fight or flight type adaptations. you know, they come more from accumulation. You know, when you're doing a zone two ride, like a 2 hour zone two ride, you're not like stressing your autonomic nervous system and that's signaling your adaptations. In fact, zone two actually enhances parasympathetic nervous system, your parasympathetic nervous system, and it reduces some of the sympathetic nervous system's dominance.
Hmm.
So it really kind of just brings some balance into your training. Whereas if you were trying to do intense training every time you hopped on a bike, your autonomic nervous system is just tipped too far to one way, which isn't going to lead to good things. And
for reference, see Joe Draper's Nike career. See how many of those results look remarkable. And that's how I achieved them. An unbelievably catastrophically difficult way to achieve really mediocre as outcomes.
Well, that's why we're here, Joe.
There you go. This is actually, that's literally genuinely why this team exists. We're like, wow, look how bad you can mess it up. We should go spread the good news. Look how bad we did, everyone.
And so this is kind of like the more you learn about how like training works and how our physiology works, the more you realize why polarized training is so important and why we bring it up so much. Because really, you're so limited on the type of stimulus you can get from doing the fight or flight type training.
Yeah.
You know, the sympathetic stimulated training. Whereas zone two is training that you're going to benefit from that doesn't signal the same way. You know, so you're not chronically in a sympathetic mode. And I kind of look at it like, this way you kind of have like, you've got this bucket you're trying to fill. You can use the one scoop with the high intensity stuff, but why not? You could fill up that bucket so much farther and faster if you're able to use two scoops. And it's cool because this way you can use these two scoops simultaneously. And it's just kind of like a yin and a yang that kind of balance each other out. And, you know, if you do too much of one or do the other too hard, you're kind of negating a little bit of that benefit, you know? So training distribution, your intensity distribution is just crucial. And Steven Seiler, who really is the one that's brought polarized training to light, definitely my favorite.
Uh-oh, he's going to say it. He didn't commit.
No, I love.
Do you feel like the ghost of Joe Friel breathing under your neck? Is he's still alive, I assume. I don't know.
He's still alive, yeah. Okay. No, I just have so much respect for all the work that Steven Seiler's done. And he's on to some cool new things that we'll probably talk a little bit more about. But something he said that I think is worth remembering is that polarized training is the vaccine to overtraining.
Probably not the way I would have highlighted that these days. That's going to create a, like, no, we can never polarize train. It's a conspiracy. The government wants you to polarize train so they can. The CDC is going to ban polarized training next month.
So just to kind of like wrap things up, really what non-functional overreaching comes down to is something about your training is out of balance. Is what it really all boils down to. And like Joe, you mentioned a second ago, like how much pros train.
Yeah.
They're doing a lot of training.
Yeah.
I really don't think that training is necessarily the problem. I think it's...
That's what I started this whole thing with. Yeah. That was the point I made at the beginning. That was a good point, right?
That's a really good point. It's what's combined with your training that can become the problem, you know, and there's a lot of people like that just don't have the genetics, the time, the lifestyle to handle the same amount of training as a professional rider would.
Yeah.
You know, like me, for instance, you know, if I do more than 15 hours a week, it becomes counterproductive.
Yeah.
You know, and there's.
And then, like, I think we talked about Isaac Boyden earlier today. He's been putting in, like, go look at his Strava. Like, we're talking 20 hour weeks all the time, right? Seems to be handling.
It's paying off.
It's he's got. It's not only is it handling, he's having a
He's
really
so
good
much
season.
Faster now than he was when he was in Nika.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, so, but you know, so everyone's different on that. But yeah, I think the point is there's no upper, I don't think there's a theoretical upper bound on the amount of training. Theoretically, an infinite amount of training would be as long as it was accompanied by the appropriate amount of rest. Now there's like the practical, I think we're probably seeing roughly where the practical, I mean, wherever Pogacar is now, is probably the practical upper limit
for him,
for him with today's technology and science. Right.
But so to be able to maintain a higher workload so that, that our training is beneficial, because nobody wants to put in the work and not get faster, right? We all want to get faster. You just have to keep in mind the things that could throw you off balance. And some of the big ones are just fueling. You know, if you're doing the work, but you're not fueling enough to do it properly.
Yeah, you can't run away from the laws of thermodynamics. It's like, yes. I think it's Newton's second law, right? Like, I don't know. That was ridiculously, hideously ignorant. But this is why we say that, like, I hate the, this is my crusade I've been on my whole life now. Like don't try and lose weight. Just don't, unless your doctor tells you to. And I don't think anyone's has, like, don't,
yeah.
Like, don't try and, like, I know that pros do that. Sure. That's a thing for professional cyclists. You're not
youth Nike riders.
Absolutely. Do not
do the work, try to get fast. And the weight takes care of itself.
Yeah, you will be at a weight that is just fine, right? Like, you're going to get faster by being stronger and focus on that. But like,
in fact, investing in fueling really makes it so you ultimately get a better body composition, because it makes you, you know, when you fuel your workouts, you're able to do more work, better work.
Yeah.
You recover faster, so you can do more work sooner again. And if you fuel your workouts, even if weight loss was a goal.
Yeah.
Fueling your workout would help you lose more. Would be, yeah.
Funny enough, I think you and I don't understand this, because it just isn't how our psychology with food works. I do actually think there's especially with the girls, people just forget to eat, which is an insane concept to you and I. But like, please eat breakfast, you know, like, make sure you're getting enough calories in your body. Dan and I don't know if you can tell, Dan and I have no problem doing that. And in fact, we have to kind of exercise control in the opposite direction. I actually know a lot of kids who don't eat enough, because they just don't feel compelled to. So I think if that's a driver too, like, that might just be a thing you need to work on, which it was mine.
It's funny how many kids I have to remind to eat before they go on a bike ride. Like,
I'm like, a lot of the time I'm going on the bike ride so that I can eat. Like, you know, like, that's where we are. Like, you should definitely listen to us, by the way. This is why we don't charge for our training advice. It would feel wrong.
So fueling and just general nutrition, just making sure you're eating good food, eating enough food, you know, that's a whole topic. Limiting your overall stress, you know, and if you're going through a particularly stressful time of life, your training might need to take a different priority or just,
and that's okay.
You know, sometimes that happens. You're not going to benefit a whole lot from your training if you're under huge amounts of stress outside of that.
And I will say, I don't think you should not go and become a doctor or a lawyer, because, you know, like Andrew's, I had 2 years in college where I just didn't, you know, like, Andrew, I feel like, is kind of in that zone right now where it's just training time's hard to come by. And like, you know, like, a lot of you, the reality is, a lot of you, if you want to have careers and families, it's just, there's going to be times where it's like, you can't do as much as you want. And that's okay. Because we have a 50-year goal for you in mind with this sport. Yeah. So that's okay. Don't freak out.
But I would say that if you are in one of those periods, like, your outside stress is your outside stress, but your bike should be a source of joy.
Yes.
And it should be an escape. And that's what it is for me.
Me too. That's exactly what it is. And I will say, like, if you're in this, you're probably the personality type where working hard is part of the joy. Like, it's like,
I love to work hard. Like,
I found that I might feel more or less compelled to race and compete, but like, the hard work and the wanting to make my body better are always there. Really have always been there. I don't think there's ever been a period of my life where that's gone away. So give yourself grace. You know, if you're trying your best, if you're TBYing, give yourself grace, give yourself all the grace as long as you're TBYing.
Yeah. And then just, you know, make sure you're following some good training principles.
Yeah.
You know, don't do VO2 max intervals 5 times a week. Don't not do them.
Or if you do, document what happens. That'd be fascinating.
Usually good training principles are going to prevent most of these problems.
Yeah.
Because good training principles includes rest, includes polarization, includes, you know, training in all the zones, not just one or two, you know. So good training principles, but again, if you feel like You know, if you've just been, if you've been putting in the work, things aren't feeling quite right, you know, try that 3-day reset. If you needed it, it'll do wonders.
Yeah.
If you didn't,
it's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine. Go do other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, go but, sit on a patio and read a book and eat a sandwich. Like, yeah. You know, like go do some other stuff too.
Yeah. Just really know that you're the one that needs to kind of monitor your accumulated fatigue. And, you know, and if you feel like you might be overdoing it, you know, talk to a coach, talk to somebody that is experienced in these things. And chances are they're probably going to tell you to take a little bit of a break.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I'm not saying take 2 weeks off unless you really think you've gone down that road.
Yeah, don't take 2 weeks off every time a workout doesn't go your way. But
yeah,
here's the thing. People listening to this aren't doing that. Yeah. They're only doing the other problem. Like, you know, the people who do that are not listening to this podcast. And that's what we've realized. We speak to a very, hi, all both of you. we speak to a very specific and small demographic. So we know that.
So, that's basically all I have. Just have fun. Take care of yourselves. Make the bike joyful.
Fall's coming. It's getting good. I rode four today.
Yes.
Fall is coming. This is the best. Find joy. Let us know your questions and your cool stuff. Everyone ride safe.
Okay. Oh, do we need a word?
Oh, what would be a good one? Oh, what's a funny one? I need to be thinking about this the whole episode, but I was really zoning out this time. I was like, no, not that this wasn't interesting. Zoning out is your secret word.
No. What about like, I did talk about like scooping into a bucket, like scoops.
Bucket?
No.
Bucket.
Bucket
is your word. Okay, bucket's your word. Amen.